All right, the Giants go for the sweep at Wrigley Field today. It will be Logan Webb on the hill for the Giants and a young lefty, 26 years old, Justin Steele, 3-2 with a .375 earned run average, only his 17th major league game and his 6th start. I wonder if he knows what he's in for today. Bruce Jenkins, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Marty. How's it going?
Very good, very good. Yeah, I was thinking about this. The series in Wrigley, all-day games. How about that?
It's just too good. I mean, if you're a baseball writer on that trip in normal times, that's absolutely dreamy. You know, great dinners every night. You got the day off. And, there was like that every time you went in there for quite a few years until they put the lights in.
Did you ever go to Harry Carey's for dinner?
I did once, yeah. I went to Michael Jordan's place, and I was kind of partial to Shaw's Fish House and some of the pizza joints.
Yeah, very good. I went to Harry Carey's, and a little bit of a touristy kind of thing, but
yeah,
all baseball all the way. That's what I liked about it.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just a great town. It's highly recommended for any number of reasons.
Well, I wonder if Justin Steele knows what he's getting into today, the young left-hander. He's been terrific as a reliever, as a starter. You know, it's been a little different story as he gets his feet on the ground. He hasn't been too bad. But, Bruce, this team, they're getting better. They're getting better in the top of the order. Yes, they went nuts with Listella and Belt.
Yeah, it really is amazing. I mean, for quite a while there, they were playing without Longoria and Listella, and they were great, and you kind of almost forgot about them. And now they come back, and they're contributing. It's truly amazing. It's one of the great stories. It's turning into one of the greatest stories of baseball's modern times. It really is. I mean, we appreciate it more here than anywhere else, but when you think about all that went into it and against the odds and the personnel and the depth and the way that they go about things, I don't know if it's revolutionary, but it sure is. It's mind-blowing, and it's after a while, you really come to expect it, and the beauty of it is you don't know where it's going to come from. I mean, the Padres are trying to stay alive. You know, last night they get the big hits, of course, from Tatis and Machado, and they couldn't quite pull it out, but with the Giants, you just have no idea, and it's always going to be some kind of delightful story.
Yeah, and it's not just unknowns. We had a lot of under-the-radar kind of people, and that's the bullpen, and that's the way you put a bullpen together in the modern game of 2021. You can go into spring training and have two guys back from last year and invite 30 others, and you will put a bullpen together, and that's what the Giants did, and it gave them, the starters. I said this morning, early in the year, the starters went deep enough in the game where the bullpen could sort of develop with McGee, Rogers, Leone, and whoever else, Littell, whoever else was in there. But then the starters started to go a little less than 6 or 7 innings, and you needed more bullpen, and then they were ready. To me, in the game of baseball today, when you look at the Giants and you think about what they can do in the postseason, the bullpen is, to me, the strength of the team. It's the best in baseball since the All-Star break, and I'll tell you this before you answer, Bruce. You know, we're looking at innings. Have you looked at these innings and run totals at 6, 5, 7, 11, 9? Bullpens can't shut it down. The Giants shut it down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Giants fans were worried about the bullpen. It's been a while now, but you're wondering, what's really going to happen here? Can we really trust any of these guys? Maybe outside of McGee, he had some stumbles, but all of a sudden, what they've built out there, whether it's from the left side or the right, they come at you with there's about 6 guys that they believe in now. And that's just incredible. I mean, the Dodgers are kind of hanging by a thread with Kenley Jansen. He's been fantastic. I think he's got 10 or 11 straight outings where he's locked down the save. But, their bullpen is far from overall efficient. It can't match up to the Giants, and really nobody is. I mean, you talk about Alvarez and Garcia, then here comes Rogers, and they come at you from all these different angles, and they all know their roles, Leone and then McGee at the end. It's Jackson, I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, it is. You could go to him. How about Tony Watson?
Yeah, Tony Watson. I mean, we'll probably see Duvall again, and every time he comes up, it's usually not for more than about 5 minutes, but, he gets a little more experience, a little more confidence. That's an electric arm. I don't know if it's going to be, something they use in October. He may be not quite ready for that, but he's going to be a big factor on the team, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too, and I think he will be part of October. I think that ability to throw 100 in short spurts is valuable, and I think they will make a spot for him. I really do. Boy, interesting. But, you know, I look at the White Sox, and, you know, when they got Kimbrel and Hendricks together, boy, this is all – it's all over with. Meanwhile, every time you look at a White Sox game, it's 8-7 or 9-8. And they're in the middle of it.
Yeah, Hendricks is really, really gutting it out. Sometimes more than one inning, and he's just—he's really tremendous. He's going to be the guy over Kimbrel, I think, in it when they really need a big save. But they've got a little bit of a comfortable lead. So it's not a big crisis what's going on there. And those two guys are going to be good. It's just a matter. They've got some injuries in the rotation, but they've got an 11-game lead. So at some point, I think they're going to be able to get the bullpen rested and then come back strong in October.
Yeah, we're going to see some magic numbers this week, get down to about zero or maybe over next weekend. There'll be some clinchings in Chicago and Milwaukee and places like that, and the Giants as well. And I said to Woe this morning, I said, boy, are you going to celebrate? And he said, well, if the players want to, but you do celebrate now just to get in the playoffs, and for the Giants, they deserve it. But I said, you better cover up all the laptops in the clubhouse, and you don't want them to get wet during the celebration.
Yeah, however it goes down, even if they're just drinking sparkling water, I mean, they're going to deserve a tremendous celebration, you know, just for everything that's happened. If it means they're going into a wild card game, you know, that's a little bit muted. But if they do win the division, I mean, my goodness, what an amazing, amazing feat.
Yeah, and they don't have to see the Dodgers again. The Dodgers have to pray that somebody's going to knock the Giants off. And frankly, the Giants sort of hold their own. And the Dodgers, well, the Dodgers had a good win last night, 5-4. Betts hit the 3-run homer. Bueller pitched. Trinan got knocked around. But would it? And I did watch almost the entire end of the game, last couple of innings. And what really stood out to me, Bruce, the Padres ran like it was like a little league game. The guy got on first, he stole second, and Machado knocked him in with a base hit up the middle. Next guy gets on, and Machado's now at second. He steals second, and Tatis gets a hit. Tatis, you know, goes to second on the throw, and the Padres had a chance 5-4 to tie it up, and Joe Kelly got a couple of punch outs. But running on the Dodgers, it was almost like a little league game.
So how many games do the Giants have left? Like 20?
They're 92-50. Yeah, 20 left.
10 of them are against the Padres. I mean, this whole stretch drive is going to be almost entirely about the Padres, who would love to sneak into the wild card. They're right there, and put the Giants in there too. And that's going to be an ongoing saga. You know, the Padres are they're pretty healthy and they're very dangerous, and that's going to be a real test because. You know, the Giants obviously can't afford to let up in any way. They have to avoid that wild card game, so there's going to be a lot of stress on the pitchers. And you know, we're talking about Hosmer and Myers and Frazier now and Tatis and Machado. That's going to be a load.
Yeah, they don't hit other than Machado and Tatis. I think they got 4 or 5 hits last night. The rest of the team got 2.
They will hit.
Yeah,
they're
going to
hit.
So?
They hit.
All right.
Yeah, they
All
hit.
Right. All right, we'll see. It's look, I think, you know, they are set up. Darvish had a good game. Musgrove.
Yeah.
Paddock.
Snell, great.
And, well, today is Snell Day. And he has got 24 innings, given up 4 hits.
Yeah.
And in those four, now he's back to being Blake Snell again. In those 4 games, the opposition is hitting .073 against him. And the last pitcher to have a number like that over 4 starts was Johnny Vandermeer.
What?
And he had 2 no-hitters. It was .067. So Snell is going today against Scherzer. He's going for his 3,000th. And
wow.
I think it's a compelling story. And, you know, the Padres are better than Cincinnati. They're better than St. Louis. And they may get knocked out because the Dodgers and Giants are going to knock them out.
Yeah, well, their schedule is ridiculous. They don't play anybody but the Giants and the Dodgers and the Braves, I think. It's just one brutal series after another. So, yeah, their big hope might be to try to knock somebody into a position they don't want to be in.
Yeah.
They're really interesting. Whether they're hitting or not, whether Snell's getting lit up or whether mm-hmm. he's unhittable, or they're just fun to watch. So it's just going to be these last 20 games are going to be an awful lot of fun. And they, I don't know if you'd call it a break, but you know the Giants do get some Colorado and Arizona in there, so we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, and the Braves, we'll see the Braves next weekend.
Yeah.
And Fried is pitching today for the mm-hmm. Braves. That means we'll get him next Friday night, and probably Charlie Morton perhaps in there as well. We'll see. But the Braves are coming in next week, and that's going to be another good series. I think once the Braves series is over, I think the Giants are going to be in good shape at that point. I really do.
Yeah, and the Braves are only 3.5 up on the Phillies, and Harper's going crazy. The Mets aren't quite out of it yet. So the Braves are going to have an awful lot to play for. They're not going to be taking the foot off the gas at all.
Did you watch any of the Yankee-Met game last night? 43,000 there. What did you think of that, the whole deal?
Well, it was terrific. I mean, I watched an awful lot of college football. I think I taped 8 games, and I'm fast-forwarding like crazy. But I did make a point of watching that, and I thought it was really important how Judge stepped up for them, because they've had some just terrible losses. I mean, they go from being the reincarnation of the 27 Yankees or the 36 Yankees or the 61 Yankees, and then they just throw the ball over the lot. They're blowing saves. It's just horrible stuff. And then they come back, and you know, the way they played last night, you know, Judge, I think he hit a couple home runs, and Chapman closes it out, and it's a big game in New York, and they just look like, you know, a team to be reckoned with. I try to watch or at least tape all of their games because there's so much intrigue there.
Yeah, and Judge did hit 2 homers. He got number 150. And he's the fastest to 150 since Ryan Howard. I think Ryan Howard was the only other one who got to 150 homers as quickly as Judge. So they did win. But the celebration and the respect showed to New York before the game, interlocking arms with both teams, I thought that was really, really appropriate. And it just showed what New York is all about. And it brought the 20 years back immediately.
Boy, it really did. It was so tasteful and very moving, and you know, extremely well done. It was like you say. I mean, when New York does something well, if you can't beat it, whatever it is, really. And I'm putting Brooklyn in there too. I'm not leaving out Brooklyn, Marty.
No, it was well. We did consider ourselves part of New York.
I know, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, you know, when you lived in Brooklyn, you know, to think of going to the Polo Grounds or Yankee Stadium, you might as well have thought about going to Minnesota. You just didn't do it. When you lived in Brooklyn, you lived in Brooklyn and went to Reese Park or Coney Island, and that was it.
Yeah, I did a lot of research on where players grew up, and every time I came across a guy born in Brooklyn, I didn't have to look him up. I knew that he grew up there, and you know, he's a Brooklyn guy. Where is he going to go? Where would you go?
No, we had our own language, and it still comes out on me as I'm talking. I still listen sometimes. So that's the Brooklyn part of me that comes out.
I love it.
You know, yeah, that was fun. It was fun growing up there and seeing it. You know, I think about it. Of course, you know, both you and I have seen a lot of baseball. You know, I was at Ebbets Field, you know, and to see Jackie Robinson play and things like that, and you're at the Coliseum to see the Dodgers in the 50s and Hank Aaron to come in and things like that. It's really a lot of fun to look back on it.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you can't get any more different than the Brooklyn experience against the LA Coliseum. but if you're that kid and that's your thing, you can't beat it. You know, you don't want to be anywhere else.
No, and you couldn't beat the Yankees. And even to this day, I like beating the Yankees. Really?
Well, yeah, I was for decades on end, to beat the Yankees was a titanic thing. I mean, in 59, when the Dodgers got into the World Series, I couldn't believe they weren't playing the Yankees. It's like, where'd the White Sox come from? Then they went away, and the Yanks came back.
Yeah, but they went 60, 61, 62,
63,
64.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. All right. We had one of our moments last night with Corbin Burns. I thought of you last night, and I know. 115 pitches. He's dealing, Bruce. The guy is not in any tense innings or anything like that. 115 pitches, a no-hitter. Cleveland's already been no-hit twice. The pitcher who started for Cleveland's been no-hit twice. And Craig Counsell, they kept showing him, and he had a look on his face that he looked like he was going to be sick. And I think he was praying for a hit, and Burns gets through the eighth inning, no hits. And now what is Counsell going to do?
Yeah, as soon as Burns got the 100 pitches, you know, Counsell came down with a flu. You know, he got a migraine. And meanwhile, it looked like Burns had thrown about 8 pitches the way he was going. It's just preposterous, unbelievably crap stuff. You know, and Burns took it really well. He was totally celebrating, the genuine celebration, and was good with the press. But, you know, give the guy his no-hitter. Are you kidding?
Really? Yeah, I thought of you, and I said to myself when he got to 108, 109 pitches, I said, well, let him finish it. So he throws 130. What is his arm going to fall off?
Exactly. And that was you. Nothing.
Yeah, so that was it. So he got the no-hitter, combined no-hitter with Hader. But did you see the catch Lorenzo Cain made?
Oh, beautiful. That's kind of a Gregor Blanco kind of play that you need in a game like that. And I tell you, Lorenzo Cain, what a great player for them to have now come back. He's just a class act. He reminds me a little bit of Torrey Hunter. Mm-hmm. Really good hitter, really good fielder, a tremendous guy, great for the whole mood of the team. And he's the kind of guy who's going to make that catch. And I think he made it. It was a great catch, but he made it look relatively, you know, it didn't look like there was any suspense to it. He was definitely going to make that play.
Well, it's funny, you know, we watch enough ball on TV, and, you know, you watch a ball hit off the bat and where it's going.
Yeah.
And
I
said to myself, that's a hit.
That's a hit. For the no-no.
And he came out of nowhere and dove in right center field. Fans, listeners, if you haven't seen it, look it up. And made one of those catches. I think the guy's terrific. And the Brewers are going to be in. The Brewers, I think, are going to be very formidable, even though Peralta, you know, can't get anybody out now. Adrian Hauser is done well. They got the bullpen and everything else. And they're starting to hit a little bit more regularly now. Mm-hmm. But Lorenzo Cain is a big deal. He's one of those guys when you win a World Series, you point to him that he did something.
Yeah, Howie Kendrick kind of guy, just a really, really reliable guy who does everything well, and you know, you get him in there with you know, Yelich and Adames will come back, and I agree, they're extremely impressive, and you know they might do some quirky things with the pitching staff, but it's certainly working for them. You know, they're 13 games up, they've only got a few less losses than the Giants. They're almost at 90, so yeah that's going to be really a force.
I think they're more dangerous than the Dodgers, to tell you the truth. I think
the Dodgers still
are not. Look, they still have an outfield of misfits, and they're still not hitting a lot, although Betts got the home run last night. I think this team is more dangerous than the Dodgers.
They sure look it an awful lot of the time. And the great thing is that they're playing up to their and beyond their potential. It's a great story. The Dodgers it's a nerve-wracking story. Even with 90 wins, you know, they were forecast to just win the whole thing and win the World Series again and go down with the greats. And they, you know, the Trevor Bauer thing hangs over them a little bit. Bill Pulaski wrote a great column on that, and Killian as well. And they just seem to have these underlying issues, you know, because Kenley Jansen going to be able to do it, and is Kershaw going to come back? But Milwaukee is just—they're just stable, you know. There's not a lot of excessive drama going on there.
No, and the two guys, Woodruff pitches today. Burns and Woodruff, when they're on, they're probably as effective as Buehler, Urias, Scherzer.
They really are. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Giants with Gausman and Webb. They can go toe-to-toe with these guys, and then the Giants' offense chews you up. It just the offense, you can't overlook what they're getting done offensively. And we talked about it just yesterday briefly, his belt. You know, Bruce, when this guy gets hot, forget it. This is the old Kary Yastrzemski. This is the grandfather hitting again.
What I love about Belt is that he had a little bit of fun with that captain's thing, but, you know, that was a – that was a kind of a bold thing to do. I think a lot of people thought, "Oh, what is he doing, naming himself the captain?" That's not what he did, but he kind of put himself out there a little bit. And he homers in that game, then he homers again. I mean, you know, he loves the spotlight that got put on him, and he's done a lot of good spotlight hitting in his life. So yet another. There's so many great stories with his team. It's just mind blowing, Marty.
Yeah, I wouldn't turn first base over to Darren Ruff and Wade. And say we don't need Belt. I'm sorry.
Next year, you mean?
Yeah.
No, I know. That's really the way the season's going. You know, Crawford has been a great example of that, and Posey probably was never going anywhere. But man, no kidding.
You probably can squeeze two more years out of him and Crawford, and not lose anything. I really firmly believe that. So I hope they make an effort to get him signed. All right, a couple of historical notes. One we had from yesterday. You and I love this one. Elroy Face, the little relief pitcher from the Pittsburgh Pirates from New Orleans. He became a house painter when he retired. His 22-game winning streak ended at the L.A. Coliseum. He lost the game 5-4 to Chuck Churn. I always remember that name.
Yes,
and
sure,
he was
absolutely.
18. He was 18-0, if I'm not mistaken, at that point.
Yeah.
His first loss of 59. So Elroy Face, one of the first relievers.
Yeah, he finished 18-1. And I looked it up. You'd think, geez, he must have pitched four or five innings every time, and he really didn't. He had a couple of those, but mostly it was just one or two innings, and the game always seemed to be tied when he came in, which is, you know, you don't see that now with the closer, but he was really the first. He was sort of the precursor to guys like Peronoski and Stu Miller, who became real specialists, you know, late-inning guys. You'd seen, you know, Joe Page and Joe Black and Clem Labine and guys like that, but Face and Hoyt Wilhelm really changed the art of relief pitching, the roles that they were in. And here's a guy who goes 18-1. I mean, good grief. He threw the forkball, which is basically jamming it between the index and middle fingers and hurl it up there, and then the ball tumbles and goes. He says, I don't exactly know where it's going, but neither does the hitter. And it was a deadly pitch for him. That game that he lost, it was a Koufax game at the Coliseum. He goes into the bottom of the ninth with the lead, but it was a typical Dodgers. We have a single for Wills, a triple by Gilliam, and Charlie Neal singled, and they got the two runs that they needed. And Wally Moon hit a couple of moonshots to left field over the screen, and pretty classic stuff. But he was, you know, another thing about Roy Face in the 1960 World Series, that wild yes. World Series between the Pirates and the Yankees, he saved three. He saved their three wins going into Game Seven. He saved. What was it? Games 1, 4, and 5, and he stood to get the win in Game 7, but the Yankees rallied against Bob Friend and Harvey Haddix, and he stood a chance to get that win. But great pitcher, and you know, 5'8", and he threw really hard. Amazing story,
isn't it? Yeah, a good one, boy. Elroy Face. Yeah, folks should look that one up. All right, 1959. Let's go to San Francisco Giants, and I love this guy, Sad Sam Jones. For the Giants, and now think of it, September 12th, they're going down the stretch here, and they're chasing the Dodgers in 59. Sam Jones wins his 20th, and he becomes the second African-American pitcher to win 20. Of course, Don Newcomb was the first, but Sad Sam Jones, he was a terrific Giant for a couple of years.
Yeah, he really was. I was going to say, not to be confused with Sad Sam Jones from the early 20th century. There's a guy who pitched for years. He was a teammate of Babe Ruth with the Red Sox and the Yankees. Sad Sam Jones. He was quite a name. And this Sam Jones, they called him Toothpick Sam, too.
Right.
Because he always had a toothpick. And they had to be flat. Don't give him a round one, and don't give him any of those fancy flavored toothpicks. It had to be plain and flat. Toothpick Sam, but they took to calling him Sad Sam Jones also. But this guy pitched for like 22 years, you know, including the Negro Leagues. And like you say, he was a great pitcher for the Giants. He won 21 games that year. They got him from the Cardinals in the deal that sent Bill White to St. Louis, and that was a big deal because Bill White was a heck of a player, but you know, the Giants have Cepeda and McCovey, and what the heck are you going to do? And they got Sam Jones out of it. He started the first game that ever played at Candlestick in 1960. He's on the mound for that, and Marty, do you know that there was a Negro League called the West Coast Baseball Association?
Is this in the late 40s?
Yeah, and they had a team in Oakland called the Oakland Larks. It just lasted one season. A Negro team called the Oakland Larks in Oakland, 1946, and Sam Jones pitched for them. So
did he? Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. He was on the team in Puerto Rico, the Santurce team that had Mays and Clemente in the same outfield. Some say the greatest winter league club ever assembled. Sam Jones was a star pitcher there. So, man, that guy got around. Always
great curveball. Great curveball. I mean, he would have guys falling down on his curveball. And then the thing I always remember about Sam Jones is 1956 when he pitched a no-hitter. And he's got a no-hitter going into the ninth inning, and he walks the bases loaded. He's got a no-hitter going, and then he strikes out Grote, Clemente, and Frank Thomas to end it and get his no-hitter.
First African-American to throw a no-hitter.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Okay. Yeah, good story. Well, that was fun for a Sunday morning. So we'll see.
Absolutely.
Logan Webb and Justin Steele. And then next week we got the Braves. And Bob Lurie goes up on the Wall of Fame for the Giants. We'll get to talk about that next week as well. So, Bruce, have a good Sunday.
Sounds great. You too, Marty. Thanks a million.
All right. Be well. All right. That is Bruce Jenkins. More coming up. Kerry Crowley will join Bill and I. And we've got more coming up right here on the Sports Leader.